Mr. Tiffin, reel 7. Now, you'd been wounded in the left thigh after moving from Mundano and the church up this through these vineyards, up a hill towards a white house.
It must have been the other hill. The vineyard sloped down to the road, and we were going through the vineyard just below the crest.
And you'd been wounded. Did you know what at that stage what had wounded you, or did you not find out until the doctors?
I couldn't really say what had wounded me, but I had an idea it was a bullet of some sort.
So you'd wiggled your toes just to check, and then
I did, yeah.
What next? I mean, what?
Right. Well, I mean, two or three of the bullets came around. I remember telling the sergeant to turn back, as we'd been told to. And we pulled her legs straight, and it wasn't bleeding all that much. Bleeding. A is subsequently found it missed the sciatic nerve. It missed the femoral artery, or else I would have been dead within 2 or 3 minutes. And I mean, I suppose that's only a millimeter out of way. And just smashed the bone to pieces, which was probably, in hindsight, the luckiest thing, the luckiest man alive. So we straightened the leg out, and I can't really remember, but if it did hurt, it had to be done. Two entrenching tubes on it, or stuffed it first of all with a couple of field dressing. Just took the field dressing and just stuffed them in, I can remember that. I was conscious. And put two entrenching tubes on it and bound it up with something. And that was that. Then I did feel sort of blackness coming over me. Obviously, it was lots of blood and shock, but I thought, you're going to die, you're dying, you see. I mean, you laugh now, but I mean, it did, and it obviously happened. I thought, I mustn't. Then the blackness came over, and then it went away again. And this was about 11 o'clock in the morning. Water. Some water, 2 or 3 people left water bottles. Anyhow, the platoon all went back, and there was 2 or 3 books, and said we'll stay with them. I said, well, there's no point in them. So two of them stayed with me. One of them was this fellow, Tuck.
You don't know the other bloke?
Yes, I do. His name was Askew. I remember him. So, there we were. Now I thought, well, okay, somebody will be along shortly. But obviously, having been told to pull back, somebody with a more overall picture and thing must have seen that they were coming back. So here we were stuck in this vineyard, and no, just the two, myself and two of the men, one came to stay with.
You'd been left behind, in effect.
Oh, yeah, couldn't do anything else. I mean, I was too badly wounded to move. And they said, well, we'll stay with me. And time went on. 11 o'clock, 12. It was pretty obvious that I must have been at the front, and they must have started coming back. Anyhow, dusk eventually came to ice. I mean, that's a long time later, maybe 3 or 4 hours. I just lay there at least 2 blokes with me. And I suppose dusk was more than 6 o'clock. Tuck said, I'm going to go back and get somebody up to get the exit. So off went Tuck. Now, before he went, we were being, yes, we're obviously coming back, because we were being, there was shelling in the road, which was just at the bottom, and watering it. So, I was stuck there with this arm and these two fellas, and there were shells and things
British shelling below you?
No, it was German shelling or mortaring. They were mortaring the road because obviously I presume the battalion's intention was to have come up this road when, if we'd have cleared the battle. One other thing I remember, the shelling was going on. Now looking back, I saw, well, they passed right in front of us, two tanks. Our tanks, which were moving up this road, right there, and one of them took, or the other was trying to attract their attention, but I mean it was hopeless. I mean you could go and bang on the thing all the time. But they soon came back again, because there was a lot of shelling and firing on the road. They were obviously firing at the tanks, but a lot must have been falling at the minion, so much so that you could hear the shell fragments or mortar fragments whistling through the thing. So we were mortared and shelled before dusk fell. Back went Duck to get help. And he never came back. He subsequently told me he couldn't find anybody who would go for. It was considered too dangerous. I don't think anybody said we won't go. I think the people in charge had said, no, it's foolhardy to have done it. So I subsequently learned. So it wasn't Tuck's fault. He did his best, I'm sure. So we I lay there till dusk fell. Now as dusk fell, we were just lying in this minion. All of a sudden, you could hear German voices. They'd obviously put patrols out, nosing their way forward. And these passed within a few yards of us. I mean, you could hear them talking, whispering. And they could only have been 5 or 6 yards away. And indeed, this went on. The same patrol or another patrol, I don't know, but they were obviously patrolling well in front of where we were, probably right up to where our positions were back there. So they'd obviously come well forward.
Were you concealed at all?
Well, only sort of tucked into a barn thing, and they obviously were trying to cover ourselves with leaves and things, which was pitched up by this time. Now, this would be early evening. See, what really feared was, I didn't say that the Germans would do it deliberately, but if I were on patrol, they saw a thing there, they'd shoot first and ask questions afterwards, wouldn't they? And anyhow, they never saw us. Well, that was a bit... whenever I see it, these things on television where people are hitting me in, these damn stupid... cowboy pictures, I mean, somebody's hiding somewhere, somebody's moving along. It always brings it back to me. It is quite a terrifying experience when you think these people were only within a few yards. So I was still down there with my leg, and after midnight, the patrol stopped. I must have looking back again with hindsight, I didn't think it was a time. After midnight, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, they started shelling. Very heavy. Obviously along the road, but I mean they were falling in this thing out where we were. And at the bottom, as I said, the vineyard came down like back to the road, where that was a ditch. And the shelling really was bad, and it was a matter of luck whether you were hit or not, because you could feel a bit of shell fragments and stuff winding through the vineyard. And I said to the chap with me, ask him. He said, I'm not going to leave, I'm going to stay with you. I said, well, what if you get back in this ditch? Oh, I can't go back to all the ditches. 20 yards? Yeah. And I dragged myself down there with his leg. People say, well, that's impossible. It isn't impossible. If it's a matter of, you're going to, and I remember that was extremely, extremely dragged myself with his help again down into the ditch. And by scouts 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. So I'd been out there getting on for 16 hours without any medical attention. But I was still conscious. Remarkably, looking back, remarkably fit. If I could describe it myself this way. Anyhow, it was obviously getting near dawn, so Astor said, I'm going back. And he said, I'm going to bring somebody that I'm really well driving on. So off he goes. And that again was perhaps the worst part of it for me. I mean, there I was on my own. Now, if Astor didn't come back, what the hell was I going to do? I mean, even if I'm found, one fear I had, it's stupid. Even if I'm found and I don't get shot and they take me prisoner and treat me decently, which I'm sure it wouldn't have done, I said, I've got to fix it on my own. I don't have medical attention as good as I was. I'd probably amputate my leg, you see. I'm sure it was good. However, so I lay there and all these thoughts. Maybe an hour and a half. And it was beginning to get like that. Suddenly I heard voices. And here's Astor with two stretcher bearers from the Leicesters. The Leicesters. And they said, come on, this bug has practically dragged us down here at rifle point, which he had. Because he told me afterwards, he said, this bloke came and said, you don't really well go, and I said, how long did he shoot you? And not as bad as that, but he practically forced these fellows to come along. And obviously this situation was highly dangerous, as I subsequently learned. I mean, all these patrols, I think it must have reached the stage where subsequently, or even that night while they were getting us out, the Germans must have practically moved back up to Mondeno when I was lying about maybe a mile in front of Mondeno. And they took me back along under here, and they were saying, I remember them saying, the buggers are all over. But they came out and got me and took me back. And I got back to the regiment later, because eventually, and by that time it was dead, so by the time I got, I said, dear, I think it was 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, it was beginning to get lightish. I think it was about 5 o'clock before I got back to the regiment late. But so I'd been out there for about 17, 18 months. So I got the regiment late post, and I felt remarkably well in the legs, pretty good. Looking back, I can't understand how I, because I had a corned beef sandwich, I had a corned beef sandwich, and I remember the doc fixing me up, he put it in a splint, did what he could for me, and it was obviously a very badly wounded group, gave me an injection, I didn't even have a blood transfusion, and
so it had never started to bleed. I mean, as you said,
it had bled, but it wasn't an artery. No. I mean, it bled quite profusely by normal standards, but it was able to contain it with these packs and stuff. It wasn't arterial bleeding, so I hadn't lost an enormous amount of blood. But subsequently, that it was a through and through wound. Only one side smashed. So it made a light mess of my leg. And the next stage from that was down to, and the jeep took us to some point on a road somewhere, where an ambulance joined us. And this ambulance, I mean, this is well up in the front, it couldn't have been more than a mile or so. And this ambulance was manned by Quakers, American Quakers. Well, I always think they're the right sort of pacifists. They say, you know, we're not going to kill anybody, which is fair enough. I mean, I respect that. But you know, we'll have to save life, anybody's life, one side or the other. And these, because I said, who are you? They said, oh, we're, what's the problem? They didn't say, quit, it's
not. I know what you mean, I can't think of it myself.
And I said, oh, anyhow, into the ambulance, we went away down the street. And I, again, but once you're in the ambulance, once you've got the thing like that, you're helpless, you're strapped in, you think, now, it's just my bloody luck, the shells are in the ambulance, you see. But it did, back to the hospital.
Did being on the jeep and then the ambulance, being bashed around, I mean, the roads and stuff, did it hurt your leg a lot?
It must have done, but I can't remember. I was so relieved that, I mean, this chap coming back, after coming back with this Eastern stretcher, who were very apprehensive, but they'd done it, I mean, all credit due to them. And I realise now that probably the Germans had pushed forward. And we were probably right in the middle of them. But, yes, I got in the ambulance and to the field hospital, where I remember lying about on the floor there, and there was quite a few wounded, there must have been, at the entrance to the, what was that later on, the camp. One stage of my journey back to the main hospital, we were all lying, we were laid about, you know, on the stretchers on the floor. But back there, where obviously they carried out an operation and tidying it up and put up the splint. And
were you still worried about losing your leg?
No, not there. No.
Had they reassured you? I mean, or did you just work it out for yourself?
I assumed with blind faith that once I was in hospital, and the fact I could wiggle my toes and the thing wasn't sort of going black or anything like that, that it was going to be all right. I mean, I must have asked. And from the field hospital onto a plane. That was big out of Bari, which was probably a couple hundred miles away. Barletta, not Bari, the main general, the main hospital was Barletta. And funnily enough, this is when the pain became worse. Every time you were lifted, I went once you were supported, I mean, the pain really was excruciating if they lifted you from the bed to onto the stretcher. But as soon as you were down again, it wasn't too bad. And into the hospital of Valletta, where I had another two operations. One main operation, the other one was to be to put some small thing like that. Anyhow, put into a bolt and beam with a pin through and away from the end of the leg. And there I was until the end of December.
So that's about 3 or 4 months?
Yeah.
3 months?
Well, three and a half months. And then I was put back into a, they took me off the, put it back into a splint. And I think I went to Bari Hospital, waiting transportation. Still in bed, I couldn't.
You couldn't walk at all?
No. I couldn't put anything in at all. And from there, onto a hospital ship, which of course was painted white, was all lit up, covered in red crosses. And again, more apprehensive to me than some of the other experiences I had. The fact of being in a bunk bed with a high side, somewhere in the bowels of this damn ship, and admittedly, it was lit up and on the left. Quite sure that the Germans, all the Italians, would knowingly sink in these down. That was my fate. You always thought, well, you know, somebody might mistake it for something that happened. However, safely back to England, and it was 4 days. I remember thinking, you know, I'll come home in 4 or 5 days, it took me about 10 weeks to go out.
Were you reasonably satisfied with your medical treatment?
Oh, more than satisfied. I've commented on that. Again, it's only with hindsight, really. But even at the time, the main surgeon there, had a great admiration for him. He was a colonel, lieutenant. He was a senior orthopedic. He had been the senior orthopedic surgeon I got at Liverpool Orthopedic Hospital, so he was top of his profession. And he always made a marvellous job of this leg of mine. No complaints at all. First rate. And penicillin had come in by then, 77B. Penicillin was in good. And, I mean, I had a dreadful wound, apart from the broken bone. They simply wrapped that up and just kept it on penicillin. And now and again, he'd come in and give it a sniff and say, "That smells lovely." It was obviously, they didn't dress it every day. Not until the very end, when the main bulk had healed and you got a lot of skin. I didn't need a skin graft or anything. And they dressed it a bit more then. But, the medical treatment was first rate. And I think right away from being wounded, once having got to the regimental aid post, I think there's one thing, if you ask my opinion of it, that the British Army's medical resources and evacuating the wounded, taking care of them, was in my opinion first rate.
So you got back to England, and where were you sent?
Well, I got back to England, to Liverpool, and off the ship, and we carried through the docks. And again, I thought, oh, Liverpool is the longest place to hell. I was going to be bombed. I was going to have the irony of being bombed in my own. However, I got onto a train. I remember saying to the orderly, I know where the hell we're going. And he said, it's some godforsaken little place. He said, you'll never have heard of it. It's called Riot General Hospital. I said, Riot General Hospital? That's 2 miles from Sunderland. You know where Riot is? That was the old mental hospital, which they, not all mental hospitals. They converted a great part of it into a military hospital. So I finished up 2 miles from home. But I mean, I could have gone anywhere. I could have gone to Cornwall. Goodness knows what. But by great good luck, I finished up there. My leg was still in a splint. But obviously, all work needed to be done, and being done, and done well, and done sound better than here, because there was a fellow in the hospital, right, a Czech, who'd have the same sort of injuries made, and I don't think that he made as good a job as it made of mine. It would be about January, and after that. And when can I get up, when can I walk? Well, obviously, we're in the back of the X-ray. The thing was all shattered, and it was only just barely joined. It was only a fact that I must have had good healing bones and this sort of thing. But I never had a pin on it. It was just the bits and pieces all seemed to merge together. You could see it sort of growing. It was a gap about that much.
An inch now.
Oh, yeah. However, I didn't know that. Getting really, I'm really attached by now. I'm about 5, 6 months. Anyhow, I kept dressing the wounds, which were, you know, getting just to the itchy stage right now. Eventually, the vet said, well, you get up when your colour comes, and you get colour before. And this was another thing. I mean, this was a be all and end all of your life. When's the bloody colour coming? I'm looking back on it. But if you've been in bed for 5 or 6 months, your mind just goes like that. The only thing is, when will they get up? Anyhow, about March, eventually, this colour arrived, and tentatively I learned my feet, which was about 6 months after I, with this calendar on and a pair of crutches. And for about a week I wasn't allowed, that is, allowed to walk around the wall. After a bit, I remember one of the first things, we were going down the pub in Ryan, and I went down the wheelchair, you know, with a board on it. Illicitly, I think. But, never let me down to the pub and went. However, eventually we said, oh, I can go home. So, still with my caliber on, I went home for about a fortnight or so. Had to report to the local hospital. Then back into the hospital there again. And then mostly I was at home visiting a hospital. There were still a few patches where the stitches had been that hadn't completely healed.
You knew there was no chance for you going back to the war.
Then, well, yes, I suspect you could find by then you were getting into
but finished in May, European.
I mean, it was obvious reading the papers wasn't going to happen. Even if I'd become fit, which with the optimism of youth, I thought possibly I would make a complete recovery. I mean, I wasn't really aware of the extent of it. Anyhow, March, I went back home, went for treatment, physiotherapy. And the wounds healed up, and I stayed on leave right away through August, July, having this physiotherapy. I threw the crutches away, and had two sticks, still with a caliber. I threw one stick away, I had one stick of a caliber. By October, the caliber was still on. I still had a stick. So, it took me a year to get anything right back to normal.
When were you discharged from the army?
Officially, not until... well, I was discharged, but I had so many weeks leave, so an incredible number of weeks of leave, because I'd had very little leave when I was in the Middle East. I hadn't had my share of leave. I'd been a year in the hospital, and anyhow, it all added up to a gratifying 8 or 9 weeks. So officially, I was still in the army until something like February or March 46, but I'd gone back to work before then.
Now, when were you fit enough to go back to work? Was your job held open for you?
Oh, yes. I mean, I'd only had a very junior position when I left, just a glorified office boy, as I think I mentioned earlier.
So there was no problem about getting in?
Oh,
no. How did you feel about your injury? I mean, how long was it before it was completely better, so to speak?
Well, it was never completely better. As I said before, I'd been a good athlete, a good rugby player. And I asked the doctor, so I said, will I play rugby again? And I remember him saying, laddie, just wait and see, and just be thankful that you'll be able to walk. However, it was obvious to me I would never play rugby again. I mean, it was pretty unequal. When I came out of the fire, it was only about that thick. I remember seeing it for the first time in horror, you know. Instead of the thigh coming out this way, so it went in and your knee was
emaciated.
But of course, I had a physiotherapy treatment, etc., etc. And by the end of 45, out here in the middle of the land, with not too much of a limb, but a small limb down, and they shield me for the year.
Did you feel bitter about it at all?
And the longer I've gone on, the more I've said to myself, oh, God, you're a lucky one. I am. I mean, that should have been the end of me, the artery. 17 hours without medical attention. A couple of blokes who were willing to stand by. No.
Thank you very much.